Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Julietta Talebi, and tackling your questions this evening are David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities and Wayne McCurry from F&B Wealth and Investments. If you'd like to send questions to us, please SMS 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. David, Wayne, good evening to you both. One of you is in the darkness. Wayne, I'm not sure if you're being load shedding, so I'm going to start with you tonight.
Yes, load shedding.
There we go. Well, at least we can hear you. And at least we had a good day on the market today, the JSE rallying very nicely. And that was notwithstanding the inflation number that was released from the United States, which seemed to be worse than expected. I'm sort of surprised by the market reaction that it wasn't more panicky, given how jittery the market has been over the last couple of weeks. Why do you think that was?
Well, look, I mean, markets don't go up or down in a straight line, and we've had a few days of very serious losses. And some sort of bounce on the back of, quite frankly, any news, it's more than likely going to happen. It doesn't mean that the bear market's over. The good news is inflation did come down, even though it didn't come down as much as what people anticipated it was going to. And really, the U.S. market started strong, but when I last looked 20 minutes ago, they sort of petering out a little bit. I mean, the NASDAQ was negative after being quite a strong start, and the S&P 500 was only slightly up. You know, we're not through all of this yet.
No. David, I mean, you get a sense of rising hysteria and people throwing in the towel and walking away. And I was listening to a Twitter Spaces event last night where the host was talking about how the market is a rigged game. It's a rigged game against all the small participants. And I thought, okay. But you know, like, we can get to that. But are people winding themselves into a panic unnecessarily?
Yeah, but this is the third time in 3 years. You know, I mean, this is not unusual. Remember at the taper tantrum that we had at the end of 2018, markets dropped something like over 20%, you know, also in quick time under the same attack, you know, that rates were going to go up and the world was going to fall over and die and this is the end and so on. And then we got through that in 2019 and into 2020 we come, and then we had the pandemic and another, you know, the world is coming to an end, chicken licking, and, you know, the sky is falling and so on. And we got through that one. So we're into the same kind of thing. The one thing, I know Wayne is right, I'm a little disappointed in the market because it seems very volatile. But from my point of view, I think that the sell-off is, you know, the momentum of the sell-off is probably going to start easing now, and we'll kind of scrape on the bottom for some time. We do need good news to turn us around, but I think the bad news is just starting to overflow. You know, we're kind of getting immune to it.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose what would that good news be? Would it just be simply lower inflation or evidence that inflation is dropping? Okay, because if that isn't the good news, I do get the sense that in the last 3 years, the taper tantrum, the pandemic, what rode to the rescue like a thousand avenging angels was a huge amount of monetary stimulus. Now, if you can't do that because inflation is high, then I understand why markets are falling in a heap. So are we in a different environment completely?
No, we're just getting an absolutely normal bear market. A bear market induced by rising interest rates. Forget the Omicron, that was a panic. That was nothing to do with economics. I mean, the result was economics, but the event was not an economic event. We are simply getting rising interest rates, higher inflation, and it comes from an abnormally good equity environment with abnormally low interest rates and inflation. And now we're just returning to some level of normality, hopefully not the level above normality. I mean, hopefully inflation does fall. And if inflation falls to, let's say, 3 or 4%, we're probably 60-70% through the bear market. If inflation's not going to fall, we only 30% through the bear market.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. And just maybe an aside, because it's not as if we discuss it on the show very often or get very many questions, probably because neither of us none of us are regarded as any experts on cryptocurrencies. But What is happening? What is happening there? What is that a symptom of? Is it just people chucking in the towel, people selling their winners? Is that symptom of something else in the market, or is it its own kind of idiosyncratic situation?
You know what's quite interesting about this the market that we're in at the moment is that there's been nowhere to hide. Normally, in an inflationary type environment, you'd actually buy equities because equities can sustain the losses. You know, they can pass on increasing prices to consumers and so on. I mean, a lot of things have changed, but you'd normally find, even if rates were going up, that equities would hold their levels. People would go into gold and they'd go into stamps and carpets and paintings and all those hard assets. Not this time. You know, this time everything has come down, and Bitcoin has just been, you know, just been one of the casualties of a sell-off of everything. The only safe haven has been cash. Literally, you know, the only place that you have been able to hide is in cash, or at the very short end of the market. You know, when I say short end, 2 or 3 month money or 6 month money. So it's been one of those markets where nothing has held up.
Yeah, it's very very curious. Okay, well, getting to questions and to the things that underpin the market, which after all are companies. I mean, I sometimes feel like we forget this. We talk about the market sell-off and the market is rigged. Well, the market is also just, you know, you've got to look at the underlying components of the market. It's companies that are listed on the stock exchange. And there's a question on clicks. It's quite an entertaining one. It says, I always thought that the long queues in the click store pharmacies was because it was so popular with customers until I waited in front of the queues. It's because their system is hopelessly inefficient. This can't be for such a good management. This can't be so for such a good management team. Is the pharmacy business a loss leader for clicks? They encourage clients to shop while they wait their turn in the queue. So maybe it's all a devious strategy to get you to fill up the time by looking for other things. Although I'm not sure if people are holding your place in the queue while you're going to shop. But anyway, Wayne, do you think...
I think you stay in queues all the time in any shop. Depends on when you go there. I don't shop at clicks often. I've personally never understood the combination of going for your bunion cream and buying a toaster at the same time. I've never quite understood that. But it is popular and it works. And clearly the pharmacy is not a loss maker. But on the occasions when I have been there, I haven't found the queues any different to queues anywhere at any particular stage. So it's always been the company's always delivered.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't have said that they're any more inefficient than anyone else. I mean, David, the pharmacy business is integral to clicks. So, I don't think it's a loss leader. I mean, they wanted to be in every single click store. That is the intention, to have a pharmacy element.
You got it all wrong, Julieta.
What's
the
that?
Reason that they're accusing the pharmacy, all the old people coming there. You know, when they get to the front, they want to talk to the pharmacist and they want to chat and they want to say, my back's sore and I've got the tummy ache.
Shapiro's friends.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that's why, you know, it's not because you want to get in and out, and then they, you know, they're kibitzing and everything like that. So I think, and the poor pharmacists have to, you know, listen to it. And what's your medical aid number? Oi, I don't know. I better go and find out, you know. And so yeah, listen, ask me. I stand in the queues at Dis-Chem. So anyway.
Yeah, okay.
But
no, that's
they're
a good
not.
Point.
I just think I'm with Wayne. I think that, you know, they're no different from any other place. I can't see anything that's inefficient about clicks. They really try hard, I must say.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe find a pharmacy in a younger area than the viewer is currently frequenting. There's a question, Wayne, it's specifically targeted at you, and it was an answer on Renette, and the viewer was quite upset because he felt that that actually Renette's biggest investments are Pension Corporation of Britain and not British American Tobacco, as was the case. I think he wants a little bit of clarification, but it seems a little bit combative, so I'm not going to read all of it. But he said, I'd like Wayne to clarify his statements in respect of Renet as it'll affect my future decisions. Well, I think this person's decisions should be made on the basis of really his, I guess, his own compulsions. Is it, if Pension Corporation is really as important, if not more so, than British American Tobacco was, does that change the game for someone looking at Renet as a possibility to invest in it, given that it still has a big discount to net asset value?
Yeah, I think let me answer it in two points. The first one is the big discount to net asset value. I mean, I know Pension Corporation obviously was large. I thought British American Tobacco was bigger. But yes, the big discount to NAV is actually why you would buy Renet. I mean, both underlying businesses are good businesses. And then just the second point is, you know, it's funny being in the public spot like David and I are. You expected to know everything about anyone, about any company, about 500 companies on the JSE, all world economics, everything that's happening in every US company, in every economy, in China, everywhere. And you on live TV answered unscripted questions and you're supposed to get everything right.
I know. It's yes. I feel your pain. Mess up all the time.
If the view is a bit aggrieved, if the view is a bit aggrieved, I'm sorry.
Well, yes, I think we try our best. Yeah. I think to some extent we are masters of all.
You try your best. You're only human.
Yeah. Well, there you've, I think we, both sides have had their say, but just on Renet's, would you be buying a Renet at this point in time? Because, and do you see any closing of that discount to a net asset value? Because I can understand why you would buy it, because there is such a big discount. But what if that discount doesn't close? Then you're sort of stuck with this thing and you don't see the value realized from your decision. David?
To be honest, I don't think it's really captured our imagination. And just reiterating or supporting what Wayne said, this is not a company that draws our attention. Oh, we've got to look at this. We've got to go deeper, you know, which certainly a Clicks would have or other companies that we discuss here. So, you know, I always answer questions or we try and focus on the companies that are exciting, that are moving, that we understand. And I've been extremely disappointed in Renet, because when the Rupert, you know, when Rupert formed this, they put British American Tobacco in it, and we hoped that they would sell off the British American Tobacco and he would do something very exciting with the money that they raised. I don't think that's happened. You know, I'm saying, yeah, we've been waiting year after year, so I'm not knocking his company, pension fund company, whatever it is. But it's hardly anything that's, you know, knocked the lights out and made it exciting.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you look, I mean, I know NASPAS and Prosus are still the massive exceptions to this. But when you look at all of these holding company discounts, eventually they get closed out. The shareholders, the managers eventually just unbundle, sell it off. All of these big holding company discounts, eventually the underlyings are either listed or they sold off, or the company's not successful. So ultimately, the discount is actually unwound. Yeah. Ultimately,
Wayne, I know I'm looking. I feel like I'm looking, peering into the darkness when I try to find you on the screen there. There's a question that came through on Sabanye asking the panel's view at current levels. Wayne, your thoughts here.
I'm cautious.
Sub 50 rand, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm cautious about shares at the moment, but longer term, I truly believe that platinum is going to be one of the winning sectors. I'm not convinced that the electric future is going to be a battery electric. I think there's a very good chance that it could be a fuel cell electric, maybe even hydrogen. But I think the future for the PGMs is extremely good. I wouldn't buy it now, but you know, you're talking about a bear market earlier on, and everyone panicking and everyone getting into quite distraught about all of this. Mm-hmm. The one very positive thing about a bear market is that at some stage into the future, you get a chance to buy shares cheaply.
Yes, I feel rather excited about it.
So the next thing we should be doing is buying. The next thing we should be doing is buying shares. I'm just not sure if it's 20% lower or 40% lower.
Mm. Wayne, if you could put your glasses back on for us, because the glint, there's a slight...
glint a little bit better.
Yeah, there you go. There, at least we feel like we've got you on screen. David,
okay, I can make a ghost story.
Oh, there you are.
Oh, there you are, Wayne.
But then it blinds me, though. That's the only problem. I can't see.
Okay, well, we appreciate the glasses. David, are you interested in... I mean, especially if you've had money in cash... And you've seen shares that for whom you feel the prospects haven't really changed fundamentally. Are you starting to get quite sort of starting to salivate at the prospect of picking them up at much better levels than you would have 18 months ago? And in particular, the resources stocks like Sibanye.
I'm maybe not resources, but I think where resources are going to get a kick is that, you know, China is coming under pressure, and all of a sudden the authorities there are starting to question. No, they would never publicly question their COVID zero policy, you know, because authoritarians or dictators don't do that. But I think it is beginning to bother them, because you're going to find growth coming under a lot of pressure, and they can't afford any kind of insurgency there or uprising or discontent. So I would imagine, and this happened today, this is why our market got a kick, is that suddenly China is starting to make the right noises. And if they do make the right noises, you're going to find demand for commodities picking up, and growth picking up, which will lead to a demand for commodities and that. So I wouldn't write off that market. I wouldn't dismiss it. We might not get heady gains in commodity prices, but I think it will at least remain, you know, fairly steady. But just on the other question, I'm a little disappointed in the number today, you know, the inflation number. But I think if it was a good reading, you would have started to see the market turn around. So it might be delayed another month. But I'm certainly starting to look at stocks. And there are a lot of stocks that are starting, you know, look very, 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 you know, very cheap and attractive.
I have to say, The Economist came out with a very interesting briefing today and said that despite what you've heard from the Chinese authorities about how we're winning the battle against COVID and we're relaxing things, ask the residents of Shanghai and they will tell you that it is a brutal crackdown that they are engaged in. So I guess a lot, I mean, if you can get sort of clear and accurate information about what is happening in China, that's also got to be something that you have to take into account, because I feel that the messaging from the Chinese government isn't particularly trustworthy, because they have to save face in some way. So maybe, you know, do a bit of digging to see what's actually happening on the ground there. But it seems a crazy policy to have, because it's just completely unworkable and you do risk an insurgency from your own people.
Yeah. The questions must be raised. Sorry, Wayne, go.
No, you go, David.
No, I'm just saying questions must be raised. You know, questions about their growth and about these policies, even internally, have to be raised by them. And they can't allow growth to sink, you know, to below levels, because they lose face in the face of, you know, in global terms, particularly at a time where their whole policy to Russia is being questioned. So I think they're going to do something or have to do something there. And I would bet on that, on something coming out and to keep the economy alive. How they do it, I'm not sure. But, you know, that's why we have Chinese bookkeeping. So.
Indeed. Wayne, you were going to say something?
Yeah, look, you must remember that a major, major difference between this time around rising interest rates and rising inflation, which is cyclical, it's happened all the time, it's going to happen into the future, it's happened in the past, there's nothing that abnormal about what's happening now. But the one very large mitigating factor is that on previous occasions, you've had a debt bubble somewhere that burst because of the rising interest rates. We haven't got that debt bubble. So the economic impact of this period of rising interest rates is going to be a lot less than what we have seen in the past. And secondly, good for South Africa in that there's no massive surge of new supply of resources hitting the market as the economy starts to slow down because of higher interest rates. So we will have a far less severe downturn this time around than what we have previously experienced. So, you know, this is what's happening now is absolutely normal. It's part of the cycle of markets and the cycle of economies. You get periods of low interest rates and then inflation goes up.
Yeah. Just maybe another cycle we seem to be going through at the moment is a period of rand weakness, which is inevitable if you've got commodity prices coming off and you've got a sell-off out of commodity stocks. Do you think this might sort of ameliorate in a couple of weeks, that actually the rand is blown out? Because especially if you are keen to buy some international shares, you're looking at this and thinking, it's 16, it's 16.05 at the moment. It was, 16.20 yesterday? Okay, 16.08. I mean, 2 months ago, you could have got your rands out at 14.31 if you were lucky enough to hit that.
Mm.
Do you wait a bit, or do you just have to say, there are swings and roundabouts, and I've just got to do it?
You've got to call the dollar. It's all about the dollar. The dollar is strong. You know, I'm looking at the Swiss franc is almost at parity. The euro has come down to 105. The pound is, 122 or whatever it is. So I think it's all money flowing into the US and as a safe haven. And as those interest rates, I don't think it's going to the long end of the market. In other words, to 10-year bonds. I think it's going into the short end of the market, the 2 years or even cash, or whatever. So I think this is just purely dollar strength.
Do you think that's a temporary phenomenon?
Look, the rand was overvalued. The rand was clearly overvalued at 1430, 1450. It was clearly overvalued. And we spoke about it on a few occasions. Now the rand slightly undervalued. So maybe it weakens some more. But I cannot foresee a rand collapse because I cannot see an economic collapse. And because of the supply story on commodities, iron ore is not going to $20 a ton.
Hmm.
It might go to 80, but it's not going to 20. So we should have a relatively mild period of rand weakness in comparison to what we've seen in the past. So the rand's not going to 20 against the dollar.
Yeah,
I doubt that.
I want to pick up one thing. Wayne has said it on many occasions, and I followed him. The one area of the market where we've been right and that has held up is at the long end of our bond market.
Mm.
Those rates are holding very strong. There's been very little movement. If you look at the US bond market, people have halved their money. If you would have bought bonds in January, you've halved your money.
Mm.
In January, in South Africa, if we would have bought bonds in January, you're actually up and getting a pretty nice yield.
Yeah.
I'm talking, the 10 to 15 to 20-year bonds. So, I mean, that also tells you a story. And it's, supporting what Wayne says, we're not going to see. It's saying to you, we're not going to see that collapse of our economy or the collapse of the rand.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there's a silver lining for everyone out there. Okay. So getting to stock picks this evening, do you have any at this stage? Or is it a little bit too febrile out there and too volatile? Wayne, what's your thought?
I'm sticking with cash Sammers last week, but at some stage, hopefully in the not too distant future, because bear markets normally are quick. The market normally corrects for all the negative news quite quickly. It's on a very rare occasion that you get a sustained bear market, which was the 70s. So at some stage I will be out there and buying, but David just refreshed my memory there. Maybe SA bonds, not bad.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. Just one point before I get to you, David. Do we have to trade the markets like it's 1979? In other words, the last period of high inflation where you had oil prices going crazy, the world fell into a period of stagflation, interest rates started rising. You don't think so?
No. The authorities did not act against inflation in the 70s. That's why it lasted so long, and that's why you had the problem. They only acted in 82. They are acting now against inflation. So it's actually very different to the 70s.
Mm, okay. Mm. David?
I think a lot of areas are coming down. I mean, if you look at inflation, the number today a lot was airfares and people going out there and spending as they come out of lockdown, you know, and areas that we're not really involved in. So I think just look very carefully at that number. But I'm getting quite not optimistic. I'm starting to look at company. I looked at Meta, which is Facebook, and I think you know, if you look at the cash generation in this company that we love to hate, you know, it is one of those businesses. But still, if you look at the cash generation, where they're putting money in, and even if you look on the standard returns on the equity that you know, on capital, these are high. These are very, very high business, and the share prices come down dramatically. So I think together with Amazon, you know, Facebook or Meta, and some of the other tech companies are starting to look very, very attractive at these levels. So just start putting the money aside so you can buy them when confidence stabilizes a bit.
Yeah. Okay. Well, gents, thank you very much for your sanguine words of encouragement. We shall leave it there. David Shapiro is from Sasson Securities. Wayne McCurry is from FNB Wealth and Investments. And just a comment on our YouTube channel, because it is, I think, causing people to tear their hair out. And we are very sorry that our YouTube channel has disappeared. But it came as much of a surprise as to us as to everyone else. And our tech guys are looking into it. They're discussing with the YouTube contacts what has gone on. So we hope to have some sort of resolution in that regard in the next couple of days. And we'll be back with Stockwatch tomorrow night, same time, same place. Have a good evening.